Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletow from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics. Joining us today from Connecticut is Richard Bistrong from Frontline Anti-Bribery. Our topic today will not be anything to do with bribery, but leveraging a lot of Richard's experience speaking at our conferences and at other people's conferences as well, and talking about being an effective moderator. So first, Richard, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today and speaking at all those conferences.
Adam, it's a pleasure and nice to rejoin you for another podcast.
Good to have you back. So before we get started, or maybe really to start, for panel moderator, what do you think is the single most important element of success?
You know, Adam, we had a nice, robust debate or discourse about this on LinkedIn a few days ago. And Forrest Egan, the chief compliance officer of Abercrombie Fitch, said it really well. He said, take care of the audience and they will take care of you. And I think that's great counsel because from my perspective, a moderator is there to spark engagement and learning by asking the right questions and helping the audience with their challenges, right? Helping them to learn. So, Adam, I think it's about if you're a moderator, try to be a best supporting actor or actress to help your attendees and audience with their challenges. If you're interested in the best actor or best actress role, then maybe you're better pitching for a keynote as opposed to being a moderator.
Yeah, and I think your job is really about bringing out the best and just the speakers as well as the audience so that you get a strong session. So let's start with the first step, really, which is long before the session itself. It's when even before the proposal stage, which is picking who your panelists would be. What's the best way you found to select them?
So, Adam, that's a great question. And if you have the luxury of picking your own panel, in other words, people that you've worked with before, and you can choose your own panelists, that's great. But if you don't, make sure to set up plenty of time for pre-work calls, maybe even to consider a video call. And as much as possible, try to get panelists from different regions, markets, and experiences. I mean, from my perspective, the more differences in backgrounds you can have, the better. And chemistry is so important. So, you know, I will spend time to look at my panelists' LinkedIn profiles to see if we have anything in common. And I'll even try to bring that out during the panel discussion. And whatever you do, Adam, if you haven't met your panelists before, don't wait to do so the day of your panel. Try to get together the day before, even if it's over coffee. Because, Adam, that familiarity will come out during the panel where everyone feels comfortable with one another. And, Adam, once the panel is finalized, I'll always invite panelists to send me, like, articles or white papers that they have authored if they're available. I think from the moderator's perspective, the more you know and the more you can read about the work, experiences, and perspective of your panelists, the better.
Yeah, it definitely helps to really have that rapport going in and know in some ways what the answer is going to be before you even ask it. So, which leads to the next question is, when do you think is best to start working out what will be discussed during the session?
The one word response to that is quickly. I mean, my model has been to set up two calls prior to the actual event. The first call is to introduce everyone, right, and to map out the panel. And it's usually during that call, Adam, that I do what I call a reverse math exercise. That means figuring out the total panel time that you've been allocated by the organizer, deduct the times for the introductions, both for the moderator and the panelists, which I'll share needs to be as short as possible, and then how much time you want to reserve for audience questions. What remains is the actual panel time, and Adam, that always looks a lot less in reality when you deduct all those other times than it does on the program. And then I'll engage with my panelists as to a discussion as to how we want to approach the panel. For example, do we want to do short presentations via slides, Do we prefer a fireside chat type of presentation, or maybe a hybrid? So that first call, which again, I try to organize as quickly as possible, then allows everyone time to think about how they want to approach the panel for our next call.
You raised, by the way, one point I really hope people don't miss, which is the whole point about keeping the introductions as short as possible. There's always the temptation to read every degree, every honor, every position that somebody's had, and that gets really long, especially if there's two or three panelists to go through. Now, you touched on one other thing there, which was the idea of, are people going to be just talking fireside, or is there going to be presentations? Traditionally, panels have often been two or three mini presentations. I find it's often stilted, and yet, attendees from our meetings really like having slides on the screen that they can refer to later. What do you think works best for both keeping things lively and also, somewhat scripted for everyone?
The panelists feel more comfortable putting up slides. Adam, I think we need to have an appreciation and respect between the difference between a slide and a handout. So let me give you an example. Let's say you're talking about FCPA enforcement. So if a panelist wants to talk about that, maybe showing a slide of a company or an individual, which is a headline from a newspaper of someone getting charged or convicted, that makes a great visual point as opposed to a grid of individual enforcement actions. Slides, from my perspective, they're just a visual guide to a narrative. If you want to address specific issues in great detail, you can always share that. You've made a white paper or a handout available. And as we know, with our technology today, almost all conferences have the ability to upload digitally or even as handouts those type of materials as a complement to presentations. So if you need slides, just try to use them as imagery. And a good rule is if you find yourself trying to make the font smaller because you need to squeeze in more copy, that's a good indication that attendees are going to try to start reading the slides, straining their eyes, and they're going to be listening to less about what you're sharing. So personally, I try to keep away from the mini presentations. I find that a quick framing of the issue with the moderator, start the discussion, and then allow each panelist to share their journey about an issue. Well, that's a great way to start the panel. And if the panelists want to put up a few slides sort of as a narrative or a visual guide as to how they share that journey, Adam, try to make them fun and engaging.
Yeah, and people do discount the fact that, too often or a present panel ends up being very dry versus the ones that are fun, engaging. It's not that they're frivolous. It's just that they give people more that they can engage with and walk out the room remembering. So, to build on what you just said, you as a moderator, a moderator frames out the discussion, gives everyone to share their initial thoughts, either with or without slides. Now, what's the next step in terms of making sure that the rest of the session is something worth listening to?
Okay. So this is now where I'm going to direct questions to a specific panelist. And that gets worked out in the second of these two pre-work calls I discuss. But this is where I make it clear to all the panelists that if I direct a question to one panelist, but someone else has an experience or an opinion about that particular response, that's the time to jump in and add to the discussion. I call those the pivot points, right? Where a question to one panelist now pivots to an issue of relevance or experience to another. And Adam, that's the part that's unscripted. While the initial questions I will put on a final question list for everyone to see, we don't script out responses or these pivot points, and those pivot points, I think, spark the spontaneity that can make a good panel great.
And spontaneity is important because people are there to listen to the interplay between the ideas, not just three little presentations all within 1 hour. So let's go back to an issue you touched on earlier about the timing. You mentioned the math part. How do you do that most effectively?
So it really is a bit of micromanagement in terms of the timing. So what I try to do is to calculate the time for each question and the direct response, right? Not including another panelist that might pivot on that response. So let's just say it's 3 minutes for each question and response, just as an example. So Adam, what I'll end up with is usually more questions than I have time, because I just want to make sure, sort of as insurance, that I don't run out of content. But so far, that's never happened. But what a moderator does need to be prepared for is the last question, the one before inviting audience questions. And it's that last question that people often remember the most. So if I see that we're running out of time and we're getting towards the time allocated for attendee questions, I know it's time to skip to that last question. That's the one I don't want to miss. So while I've never used any of my extra inventory of questions, I have often had to move to the last question and skip the others because the panelists started engaging and pivoting on one another's response. To me, that's a measure of success when I have to skip to the end, but I'm always making sure to keep an eye on time. Adam, it's going to move fast, and I have seen far too many panels where attendee question time gets thrown overboard because the moderator didn't respect and adhere to that time at the end. And what I'll share with you is the audience question time at the end. I usually allocate that at 25%. And to me, Adam, that 25% is sacrosanct. It's a hard stop. And I do not allow the panel questions to run over time and to reduce the time to let the audience get involved.
Yeah, and it's important to do that. And also, you know, I just want to say to me as a conference organizer that the session's got to end when it's scheduled to end. I mean, if you go over, you create two problems. One, a significant percentage of the audience starts getting resentful that they're being held there or have to get up and leave and rush to the session. And whoever's running the conference is not happy because they've got less time to reset the room before the meeting. Well, you mentioned last questions ready and running out of time, and we are running out of time. So let me ask you one last question. What's the best way to get the audience involved?
Well, Adam, like the SCCE Institutes, attendees can choose from a number of different tracks where they can attend. So I always, right from the start, like to be gracious and appreciative to the attendees for having them join us and to make sure they understand that there's going to be plenty of time for questions at the end. And Adam, that's another way of making sure that that attendee question time doesn't get compromised because you've already made the commitment to it right at the start.
Well, Richard, thanks for making the commitment to doing this podcast and for sharing this information with everyone. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.